So I think this one will conclude my testimony. This will be the last part of all the stuff I share about my testimony, but I feel like there's just a lot of little things that I'd like to touch on to finish out my testimony part. But thanks for tuning in. This is the Metalcore Church Podcast. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you, God, for this group. Pray that you would speak through me and just let people know that there's hope through my testimony, that I'm not trying to glorify my sin, God. I need people to know who I am and where my heart is coming from so that they could see what we're doing here. And I just pray, God, that you speak through me, use me. Let us be a guiding light out of the darkness, God. You don't have to be a Christian to tune in here. And I just pray that you will bring the right people that I need to hear what I have to say. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. So, I'm on my walk, so we'll do this while I'm walking. Because I got limited time everywhere. But it's okay, because I just wanted to share a few things that happened. Just some things that highlighted my memory. You know, it's hard, because at the end of that last one, I was talking about how I really like to get revenge for all the stuff that happened to me. But there was a little bit of cause there, I guess, because the guy who was trying to get violent with me in my apartment, that's the reason I called my stepdad to help me back me up. And so I went over there, and when I was there, and I realized that my dad wouldn't help me. I told him, like, hey, I know where this fool's mom lives. I'll deal with it myself if you're not going to help me deal with it. And I'm pretty sure that they used that as, well, I was protecting his mom. But I was really trying to get at the guy who was trying to get violent with me in my apartment, who is now currently in jail with no release date. He had a release date and he never got released, so just means he's screwing up in jail, so I'm not really mad about it. But I lost control because I wanted to have the upper hand. And I think that you don't have the upper hand when you're serving the devil and you're using drugs and you're involved in that life. You don't get the upper hand. When you're serving God, you get the upper hand. And when you stay plugged into church, you can, you know, like, I don't know how to explain it, but like, I was always the one that they were trying to capture and to try to rob, and I was the butt of all the jokes. But when I'm serving God and I'm clean and I'm attending church regular and reading my Bible and attending Celebrate Recovery, the joke's not on me no more, because I'm not a slave to addiction anymore. And they're all still slaves of addiction. So when somebody tries to defend them, now, as I'm a Christian, you can't claim that I'm the butt of the joke, because I'm not a slave of addiction anymore. And when you're currently a slave of addiction, how can you say anything bad about somebody who's got out of that life, who's broke those addictions, who's walking in recovery and currently staying plugged into their recovery program and not becoming complacent and putting their sobriety in jeopardy. You can't, because they'll always revert back to their addiction. And then when you're in your addiction, they compare like, oh, he has a lot going for him, so we're going to attack the guy who has the most going for him. I've even heard stories from inside the prison where they're like, this guy is, he's not, there would be like a whole gang of guys, and some of the gang members would tell one of the guys, hey bro, you don't belong with us. And he's like, what do you mean I don't belong with you guys? And he's like, you don't belong with us because you got a lot to lose. You're a good dude. And he's like, been putting in work to be a part of the gang for years. And the gang tells him, hey, we get it. You're a good dude. You shouldn't be. You don't need to be in this life. And that's what they do. They evaluate you. And if you have a lot going for you, then you become the butt of the joke. So I advise you, man, to get the ball rolling in your recovery. Get away from those people, man. People that only want to come around and get high with you. You don't need those kind of people in your life. I had to get rid of a lot of people from my life because they just wanted to drink and get high and be irresponsible. Like, I'm still irresponsible, but when it gets to making bad decisions for my life, like, God will intervene and he lets me know, like, hey, you're going down the wrong path. Probably shouldn't be doing this. So I've been walking with God for a while now. So there's all this with this guy, but I'm pretty stable now with all that. But there was a couple other incidents where I remember the first part that broke me off from all my friends. It really isolated me. It was the first stepping stone to like doing drugs by myself. You know, like you're a casual drinker at a party. And then maybe you get into a fight at the party, so you're not really welcome anymore, and then you become like an isolated alcoholic where you drink by yourself all the time. There was a point where we had drugs and we didn't have anywhere to stay, so we were all hiding in like some back alley parking lot. And basically all we could do was stay in the car until the sun came up so we could go about our day. The problem was I had went for a walk and I arrived back where everybody was. And I was like, hey man, we could come up. There's some computer monitors and I'm sure that they all work. They're just sitting there behind Radio Shack. And I told my friends, hey, if you give me a ride, I'll sell them and we can make money and then we can come up again. So I convinced them, they give me a ride. I popped the trunk. It's like 4 in the morning. And I'm loading up these computer monitors in the back of the trunk. And two police officers roll up and bust us. They sit us on the curb. They find the dope. We had a full dope pipe and a sack of dope. And the cops, you know, they make us sit on the curb. And the two people who are with me, they start talking to each other. And I'm watching the cops and what they're saying. And I hear the cops say to the other cop, hey, we'll make a deal. If they all lie, we book them. If not all of them lie, then we let them go. So I hear that from the police officers. And the other people who are with me are working together to get their story straight, which is a lie, which they're trying to collaborate on what they're going to say when the police talk. So the police, you know, they walk over to us and they're like, hey, when was the last time you used? And everybody had a different answer by the time the police asked. So it was like, not for a while, a couple days ago. And nobody said anything except for me, who tells the truth. It was like, we spoke a couple hours ago. Like, the pipe is still hot. Like, what, are we stupid? And none of us go to jail. All three of us were under the influence of a controlled substance, in possession of a controlled substance, driving under the influence. But the fact of the matter is, none of us were booked. None of us went to jail. The police took everything and left, didn't charge us with anything, and left us there on the curb. So after the incident, my three friends labeled me a snitch because I told the truth. So I actually wore that title for decades within my own personal group of friends as a snitch. But I never really snitched on anybody. The only reason that we weren't booked that night for those three charges was because I told the truth. But nobody wants to admit that in the long run. So there were a few other times where I was riding my bike and I ran a red light. I got pulled over. I had a special sweater on me with some hidden pockets. I had an ounce of marijuana in one of the hidden pockets. And the cop searched me 50 times over. Didn't find a thing on me. Man, I was like, I'm going to jail. I think the cop even heard me say I was going to jail. I'm going to jail. Searches me, doesn't find anything. I walk away scot-free. And the second time I got busted, I was laying down. I was getting a ride because it was like a couple miles to where we were headed. So I throw my bike and I jump in and lay down in the bed of the truck. So we're riding. We get pulled over. But I'm in the bed of the truck with the dope. So I didn't have it stashed. I just had it in my pocket. So when he tells me to get up, get out of the back of the truck, sit on the end of the truck. I'm sitting on the end of the truck. I pull the dope out of my pocket and I drop it on the ground. And I step on it. So the cop has me take my shoes off, take my socks off, searches me, doesn't find nothing on me. And I'm surprised because, again, everybody is under the influence. We're driving under the influence. And we have a possession of controlled substance. And the police let us drive away. And the police didn't realize that it was under my shoe. We have plenty of stories like this. A lot of us do. I might even get the chance to interview another guy who might have a testimony to share. I'll keep you guys updated, but I just didn't learn my lesson. I just wanted to keep getting high and keep hanging out with people who would rob me. They'd lie to me and were involved. They were involved in all kind of other stuff that I didn't know about. I remember I went to my friend's house and he just gets busted. We didn't even do it. We just show up at his house and he's in trouble. He's busted. This grandpa jumps out of this big old truck and he's like, yo, you failed this drug test. And for me, you know, we smoke weed, we smoke cigarettes, we get high. And this guy, his grandpa, pulls out this drug test. And he goes, failed for every drug on the list. And I was like, what drugs are on the list? I'm talking, he fell for the whole entire list. Heroin, crack, acid, mushrooms, LSD. And I was like, dang, I didn't even know you did all those drugs. Like, that's what I mean. Like, it was pretty crazy. In high school, I got blamed pretty bad, pretty harshly too. I don't think I showed up to school after, but they went out, and when my poor siblings, man, they remember, was at a friend's house. He was a big time computer researcher. He was researching drugs, and he learned about this drug called dextromorphine. And if you took, you know, 6 pills, you would, this is how the experience would be. If you took 18 pills, this is how the experience would be. If you took 27 pills, you'd have like an out-of-body experience, and you do all this. So me and him, we couldn't have been more 17, 18, and we don't have no money, and our parents won't give us no money. So we have to go to the Walgreens. We steal like 4 bottles. We get back to his house. And we're like, let's do the max so we have the out-of-body experience. So I didn't know what the drug was until I showed up at this guy's house. He told me what the drug was. He knew where to get it. He read all about it. So we go and get the pills. We both do 27 pills each with water. So we're hanging out. About an hour later, I black out, he blacks out, black out at the same time. I come to, and I don't know what's going on. His mom busts in the room. This guy has broke out in hives, red hives all over his body. He's scratching himself so bad he's bleeding. And I'm like, holy crap, dude, what do we do? I can't see straight. Everything is fog. The drugs screwed me up. I can barely walk. I'm like drooling on myself. His mom walks in. What is going on? I can't even function. I push her out of the way and run through the door, and I run out of the house. I run all the way home. It feels like I'm flying. I have no motor function control. I run all the way home. No one's at my house. I cross through the kitchen window. I hit the floor of the house and I black out. I thought I was dead. The run from house to house wiped me out. I puked up a good half of the pills in one throw up. So I remember my brother and sister came home and they see me like that. Puked up, you know. Stomach is bleeding on the inside. So it was like blood and pills and puke and breakfast. And so I survive. I don't know. My mom tells me to clean my puke up and go to my room. And I was completely overdosed at this time. So I go to sleep. I wake up. Mom makes me get up for school. Get up. I'm surprised I woke up alive. I get to school and I find out that my buddy who did the pills, he ended up in the ER. He got his stomach pumped and they had to give him the decatheter. So I don't know if it was like justice for, you know, showing me how it works, but thing was, at South, I got blamed for it. They were saying that I killed the guy, that I gave him the drugs, that I'm the problem. And I was like, dang, that was the first of many getting blamed for stuff. So, just a lot of hard times. I had to live that down. That was a high school live down. Ended shortly after. I'm trying to think, I had another scenario. just a lot of dirty underdealings in there. My girlfriend and my best friend locked me out of the apartment because they're all sleeping together. Some of the traumatizing stuff keeps me single and focused on my relationship with God. I think it's best for everybody to focus on their relationship with God unless you're already married. Just keep pursuing God and everything seems to work out. You got the upper hand in life, the upper hand in finances, the upper hand on my sobriety. If I could do it, you could do it. You know, it's just that maybe you gotta tell that one fool that's gonna get crazy, I'm out, I'm done. I know some people have some friendships that are built up, but if there's a friendship that's meant to be, I believe that God will bring it back together. If you and the girl that you've been using dope with were meant to be, then you guys will understand that when it's time for both of you to get clean. Because God separated me from my girl that I was using with. And that might be the case. But not always, you know. If your girlfriend wants to pursue her relationship with Christ and you want to pursue your relationship with Christ, then it should work out in the end. I don't want to leave this hanging short. There's so many things that happen. I remember like a few incidents where I don't know if it was selling dope or getting dope or visiting people in LA. I had been up for a very long time. I think it was like the max time I ever been awake. I didn't sleep for like 21 days. I was like legally insane at this point. So we end up in LA at a beach, someplace called the Sunken City, and we're at Suicide Point. Getting high, and I remember standing there on that cliff, like, man, started seeing fog, and the devil started telling me to jump, and I was like, nah, man, something ain't right up here. It was scary. I thought they were gonna, you know, throw me off the edge for a minute there, but they seemed like they were dealing with jumping off the edge while we were there too. So I was like, dang. I ended up getting back in the car, and we smoked a lot of dope while we were on Suicide Point. So as soon as we got back into the car, I fell asleep for like 3 days. I wake up, we're still in LA, they're scamming the bank when I wake up. So they're, I don't know, doing some money laundering with some guy. And they make out with a gang of money. And I remember we were coming back from LA. I don't know, we got food. There's two ways you can go to LA. You go to LA with Christ, or you go to LA with drugs. You might not come back alive from LA if you go there to pursue drugs. They kill people all the time. And gangs hate outsiders. There's over 9,000 gangs in the population. I tell you, they don't wear the LA hat because they're like the Dodgers. They wear the LA hat because they're in a gang. So we're on the freeway coming back, and I remember this guy who was a truck driver. He like handed us some marijuana through the window while we're stuck in traffic. speak out loud as a cop the stuff that needs to be. It's good to stay healthy. I just need to drink some water. I'm walking 3 miles a day. Trying to anyway. Can't do it every day because I got stuff. I think that was the last time I seen my best friend though. After the incident with him and my girl, that was it with that. And we used to hustle a lot for money around here. One night, we're scraping the bottom of the marketplace fountain. About $250 in pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters at the bottom of the marketplace fountain. We bag it all up. We get squeegees from the gas station. We get some dustpans and a couple of black trash bags. We load it up. All the coin, man. I think we missed like 30 cents right as soon as we're sweeping the last 30 cents of the fountain. Security's like, hey, what are you guys doing in there? And he's like, you guys gotta leave right now. We're like, okay, we're gone. So we just grabbed the pack that was with us and walked right off the marketplace at like 3 in the morning. So we may make it out of that, and we're staying in this RV in a Walmart parking lot. We literally like lived in a Walmart parking lot for ages. It felt like ages. And I remember I had one stereo, man, and they pawned it. That was the last thing I had beside my car stereo, and they stole that also. I had the most ghetto little tape deck radio that I would listen to crab radio on. And after the incident that I got called a snitch on, and I made it back to my car, they had robbed my stereo from the dash. Bro, that was a really low point in my life. And then, okay, so I got one more. There was a time when this guy Alex was freaking. He was a drug addict, man. I went to buy his mom's car. So I bought his mom's car. Got the money from my grandpa. And I buy the car, and I tell this guy, hey, I'll give you the car back if you could give me the dope, like a lot of dope. So this guy goes, trades my car, or he does the classic, I'm gonna get violent with you and rob you for the car in my hotel room. Probably be like the 100th time it's happened to me. Probably shouldn't do dope because people always try to punk me. So he takes the car from me. Or I give him the car because I know he's gonna get violent with me. So I sign the pink slip back to him. He brings back money for me. I don't know what happened, but they were trying to set me up or something to get all of it out away from me, the dope and the money and everything. I was pretty still pissed about him. I almost killed him a couple times in town. I seen the guy down at Foster's Donuts and God has asked me to let it go since then, but sometimes it comes up. He takes my car and the dope. And he tries to set me up with his sister. Pretty grimy dude. Set me up with his sister like that. But I didn't do anything with her. She was, I don't know what dumpster she crawled out of, but she was in bad shape. Bad, bad shape. I still see the RV too that they were riding around in. It's now down in Oildale. So basically, he takes off with the dope that he got me for the car, leaves me at his mom's house. So I'm waiting for him, he don't come back. So I just pack it up and leave. And I just got up and left his house, started walking down. I decided to leave town. I got the $200 and I just feel like things are super shady. I'm all drugged out and paranoid. So I take the money and I go down to LA. I get to the Greyhound station. There's a guy at the Greyhound station who tells me, "Hey, come with me. Are you?" I know. He was like, "You don't got nowhere to stay?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Come with me. I know a place where you could stay." And this guy takes me to Skid Row, bro. It's the first time I've ever been to Skid Row. I buy a cigarette from the guy selling single cigarettes at the door. This guy tells me I can sleep there. Robs me for 20, or he like cons me out of $20 in the bathroom there. So I was like, this freaking guy, bro. He would like put me in a situation where I had to bomb on him or walk away. So I walked away because I'd never been to LA. I didn't know what was going on. And I get a harsh intro awakening. And nothing will ever make, man, this guy. So I'm walking down away from Skid Row. I'm out of there, bro. I'm not from Skid Row. I'm not that homeless. I'm homeless, but I'm not that homeless. I got like freaking $200 minus the 20 I just got ganked for. So I had $180 on me. And I was gonna go get something to eat. As I'm walking away from Skid Row, some guy jumps out at me with like a couple grams of dope and shows it like right in the open. Like, what the hell? You know, I've been to a lot of people's houses to smoke dope, man. And they'll be like, "Is he a cop? Is he a cop? He's a cop, isn't he?" And I'll be like, "I'm not a cop. I don't." You know, I didn't know where the idea came from until I hit this guy. Jumps out of like the bushes, out of the woodwork. He's like, "You want to buy this?" And I was like, "No, I don't want to buy that. Get the hell out of my face. I'm trying to come down." And so as soon as I said I'm trying to come down, he turns around, a police officer rolls up to the corner, shows him the dope, and says, "This guy is on dope and he's coming down right now." I was like, dang, bro. I never seen a snitch in real life. You know, they called me a snitch, but I was just trying to save us from having to go to jail. this guy was like a real snitch, man. It was crazy. Like, you know what I mean? It's like the inside guy for a gang, but I guess he was homeless. And that was his hustle for money, was to catch people who were doing dope. They tried to set me up to take me into the LA County jail. Man, I missed the fireball there. So after all that, I like get hella lost in LA for like a day. I'm homeless, I got nowhere to go. I pack up my stuff, I get back on the Greyhound, magically. Actually, I think I conned a taxi guy. I said, let me go in and get changed and I'll come right back. So I went in and I never gave him his change and I dipped. I made it home safe. Let me get another drink. I think the hardest part was, I'd be all drugged out and strung out, but when it would come time to go home for like Christmas and Thanksgiving, and we'd all get together for the family, we were already the black sheep of the family. But it like was bad. It was like really bad. And it progressively just got worse over time. But I always wondered like why my distant family was so upset at my mom and so distant from me. So like I got it, like we did drugs and we made bad decisions for our life. But it like lasted well beyond that. Like 30 years worth of unresolved tension between my mom's side of the family and the rest of the family. So just recently, after all the incidents, I find out that my dad, while my parents were married, my dad had told this lie. And he had went to my great-grandma and said, if you don't give us the $5,000, we're gonna get divorced if we don't get this money. And my great-grandma, the sweetest sweetheart in the planet, writes my dad a $5,000 check and gives it to her. My mom never knew anything about it. And so he just dipped and burned my great-grandma for $5,000. And the rest of the family found out about it and has been pissed at my mom's side of the family forever because of the incident. So not only did we have to live with that, but we had to live with the repercussions of that decision for a lot longer than we wanted to, which was kind of a low blow. The most tweaker scandalous move ever. So to add to my desire for revenge, you know, my mom said that she talked to my great-grandma about it though once, and she said for him that it would be that she forgives him and that everybody needs to be loved and forgiven. I believe otherwise. My great-grandma's our whole family's role model, man. She was just a wonderful Christian. Even when I was living in her house and I was growing weed on the roof and I was sleeping in her garage because my mom didn't have anywhere to live, so she'd let us live there. And no matter how gothic I dressed and how long my hair got and just never pursuing a relationship with God while living in her home, she still loved us. She still cooked for us. She still prayed for us. My grandma was, she was a member of the Olive Drive Church before Cannon Hills took over. She's a good woman. She did good for us, but, I think that she's the last person on earth that deserved to be robbed by a tweaker. So there's one more story before I carry this podcast too long. I got one more if I can remember it. Did LA, Carja, well, man, there was a movie where you'd have to get in debt with the wrong people, and then when somebody would try to screw you over, the people who you were in debt to would save you. When I say a giant game of charades took place while doing drugs, that's how it would have to be. You would have to be in trouble with multiple people who wanted to kill you because of what you did, in order for them to not let the people who you're next to kill you and rob you and screw you over. It's pretty stupid. But you'd be surprised how many people live in that lifestyle. I just seen some guys the other day, man, just griming on the phone, trying to come up on money, trying to con people, and it's like constant on the phone 24/7. Can't even function properly with other people because constantly trying to call people and convince people to give him what he wants. Some people just want to sell out to that. But there's no reason to do good. They don't think that there are any consequences. They just decide to live their whole life doing whatever they feel like. And there is a swift retribution the moment that they die. It's all a big joke until that one push takes your heart out and you're done. I'm not sure who's all. I think everybody managed to get clean. I'm trying to think, there was one more. Come on. My brain is frying. Actually good to be clean out here walking, cleaning out your lungs, spend some time on the treadmill, man, get rid of the cigarette smoke, throw away the mash trays. My mom said she prayed and asked God to help her quit smoking cigarettes. God told her to throw away all the ashtrays in the house. It would stop reminding her to have a cigarette. As soon as she did what the Lord said, she never craved another cigarette after that. For me, I just asked God to help me get clean, and he was like, I want you to go into a program. I would go into the program. You couldn't smoke in the program, or you'd get kicked out. Having to decide whether a cigarette was worth 3 meals a day in a bed, definitely not. So I was homeless outside the program, so I had to stay. And after about 7 months, that was probably, I had already been clean from cigarettes, but except for the day that I got kicked out and thought that I was homeless again, I smoked a cigarette But then my family takes me back, and then I was like, I had to kick again. I like had a couple cigarettes because I thought that I was homeless again, and then my family came to get me. So like rekindled it and then dekindled it in like a day. See if I can remember. I wish I could pause this and then come back. It'll only stop the podcast though. Let me encourage you, if you don't know how to run, just walk. Walk a mile. Walk 2 miles. Walk 3 miles. Do what I do. Walk 3 miles every other day, whenever you can. Take water and some music. Record a podcast. My probation officer. I was on probation. She's like, you can drink if you want. And I was like, no, I'm done with that life. I've eaten the fruit of the devil for too long, man. The consequences just aren't worth it. Gambling on my life every other day. If it wasn't the drugs that were going to kill me, it was the people I was with that were going to kill me. Get old, and then sorry, I'm tired. I'm walking. I got one more, man. I got one more incident. I just can't seem to remember. I'm trying to shuffle through all this. I think I covered everything. Okay, I can't think of it. There was another one. Just a bad incident. Where I... If you make it this far in the podcast... Dang it, there was another... No! Okay, so... Well, I guess... this other guy, man. Anyways, let me conclude it and then we'll come back. I'll touch on it a little bit next time. Thanks for tuning in.